90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City, Community Radio. Streaming online at www.kkfi.org.
The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
Good morning. Welcome to Cowtown Conversations. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. Today we are in our final segment of a series on wills and beneficiary deeds, life insurance, funerals, and trust. And our topic today is trust, and our guest is Donna C. Watson, Juris Doctorate, Trust Administrator for Country Club Trust Company. Good morning, Donna. Welcome to Cowtown Conversations.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm doing great, and yourself? I trust you're feeling better than the last time when we did this, when you were definitely under the weather and at home.
Yes, I'm feeling great.
So, Donna, can you remind our listeners and briefly tell them a little bit about yourself?
Well, I am a graduate of Rockhurst College. I have an undergraduate degree in accounting, and I graduated from Loyola University, Chicago, with my Juris Doctor. I am a licensed attorney in Illinois, Oklahoma, and Missouri.
So how did you get from Chi-Town back from the Windy City back to Kansas City?
Well, Kansas City is home, and sometimes you just have to come back home. And it's been a real blessing to be here during this period of time, and this is why this particular topic area is so important to me. I dealt with the end of life of both of my parents in the last 5 years, and it really sparked an interest and a devotion to spreading information about estate planning.
So how did you find yourself to become a trust administrator?
Well, I was interested in estate planning and thought that I might resume practicing in that area. But an opportunity presented itself with Country Club Trust, and it's been remarkable. I am able to help people execute their goals and their intentions for their families, and I think the client interaction is what I enjoy the most.
So let's get to the meat of the matter. What exactly is a trust?
Well, a trust I would describe as an instrument that creates a fiduciary relationship. And when I say fiduciary relationship, it's a legal relationship where a settlor transfers assets to a fiduciary for the benefit of someone else. So the fiduciary has a responsibility to manage the assets, to develop the assets, and distribute them the way the settlor would prefer.
So how do you establish a trust?
So it's established through a written instrument where the specific dispositive provisions are outlined according to the settlor's request. It should be written, and while there are a lot of online resources, it should be prepared by an attorney. I'll make that plug.
So can you do an oral trust? Or you said it must be written, but in some cases, usually if it's not in writing, it didn't happen.
Yes, it's always best to write your intentions and have so they have legal effect. Oral conversations, oral attestations can be disputed, but a writing that is signed and authorized is valid, and it can be proven. So my recommendation is always to have things in writing.
People may not know that trusts have existed since the Roman times and become one of the most important innovations in property law. Trust originated in England, and therefore English trust law has had a significant influence, particularly among common law legal systems such as the United States and countries of the Commonwealth. So If you establish a trust, how long can that trust last?
Well, it depends on the intent of the settlor. What you want to do is establish a trust for a specific time period. If it goes on, it's really not supposed to go on for perpetuity. And I say that meaning there should be some termination time in which the beneficiaries can receive the assets and then perhaps create another trust. But you don't want it to just linger on indefinitely.
I know, as you, the Kauffman Foundation and different things are things, organizations that were set about trust, and Warren Buffett has said that he's put a lot of his assets into trust, but he said he wanted to make sure that all, within 5 years of his passing, that all of his assets, which would be considerably over $100 billion, would be liquidated. So that would be a lot to spend per year.
Yes, well, I'm sure he has outlined a lot of different beneficiaries, and that's probably going to be a blessing to a lot of folks.
Yeah, I know. When Joan Kroc, the widow of Ray Kroc, who founded McDonald's, she left all of her money to the, I want to say it was the Salvation Army, so she left them $2 billion worth of trust worth of McDonald's stock. So yeah, trust can do a lot of great work in the community, in the city. So why would you want to establish a trust?
Well, there are a few reasons why you would want to create a trust. One, it is a way of avoiding probate. So when I spoke a few weeks ago, we talked about assets being probate assets and non-probate assets. So if assets are placed in a trust, you do not have to go through the probate courts and present a will. The assets can be distributed per the agreement or the outline of the trust. It's also a way of managing assets. For some people, they might need some direction and some guidance and some, let's just say, management of their assets. And it's important to have someone in place that can help them so that when they get a big windfall of money, they won't go through it. They have someone that will help educate them and invest the assets over a period of time. And so that may be another reason why.
So in case a parent may set up a trust, so if their child was a minor, and things I've heard about where they may get part of the money when they're like 21, another part when they're 25, and then the bulk of the trust after they turn into their 30s so they don't run through it.
Yes, absolutely. And that's a very strategic measure. And it's based on usually the settlor's understanding of who their beneficiaries are. And so the trust document helps to execute the settlor's intentions after their death.
I know some of the, as you talk about that, some of the common forms of trust, you were saying earlier, like if a child may be in an accident, they may get a settlement, and that money has to go into a trust, and then it would have to have a fiduciary agent, somebody to oversee that to make sure that the money is not squandered.
Yes, we call those special needs trust. And the trust assets are managed usually by a corporate fiduciary, but sometimes not. And it's a way of making sure that the injured party is taken care of during their lifetime. And you also want to make sure when you have those type of trusts that they are drafted well, because you don't want to affect their ability to, you know, obtain Social Security, SSI, or any other benefits. So it's very important that those types of trusts are drafted well.
And that you bring up a great point, because somebody may be thinking, well, I've got a child, maybe somebody with special needs, or I want to leave money to a loved one that really can't take care of themselves. And if you leave them the assets, then they don't pass the means test. But if you put the assets into a trust, then they would still be able to continue to get their benefits. And most importantly, in some cases, it's the health care benefits that they need while still being able to have the income coming in from a trust.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So do you need thousands of dollars in assets to start a trust, or millions of dollars, or can you start a trust with maybe if somebody just has a dollar? What do you really need to start a trust?
Well, you need some assets that you would like to appreciate over time. I'm not saying that you need a certain dollar amount, but it has to make sense. As you're hiring someone to draft the trust, you want to have obviously more assets than their fee would be. But as long as you have assets, and I'll give you examples, stocks, bonds, real estate, and then people tend to have insurance and they leave those insurance policies to the trust. As long as you have assets that can be placed in a trust, I say you're a viable candidate. I think it's a misconception to believe that this is only for wealthy people.
So is a living will a form of a trust?
So a living will discusses like medical direction during someone's lifetime. And when we're talking about trust in this context, we're talking about assets during their life and beyond. So I think sometimes we start discussing different types of vehicles, different types of estate planning vehicles, but I don't want someone to think, well, I have a living will, so I have a trust.
So what is the average cost to establish or set up a trust? Because I know it depends on all the different things and different variables, but if you generally average it out, what would a person spend to set up a trust?
Well, I've seen ranges anywhere from like $1,500 to $3,000, sometimes more, sometimes less. And the reason the range is in the thousands, there's a lot to consider when you're creating a trust for someone. As attorneys will review their assets. They assist with titling of the assets that are going to be placed in the trust. It's more than just a document that you might be able to pull offline. Also, there needs to be conversations about what the settlor's intent is with the assets. Do they want it to go on for, say you have a spouse, do you want the spouse to have income for life and then be distributed to your then living kids? Or do you want just an outright distribution at your death? Do you want to create the trust now, which would be during your lifetime, a revocable trust? Or do you want the trust to arise at your death, which would be a testamentary trust, which comes out of a will? So there are a lot of things to consider. So the range may sound shocking to some people's conscience, but I think if it's something that's going to assist your family with the distribution of your assets at death, it's worth the investment.
So how does a will and a trust, they seem like there should be like brother and sister, you know, mother and father, they should work together. Does a will depend on the trust, or does the trust need the will? How does that particularly work?
I think they're companion documents, and I'll say it this way. If you have a trust, I would say you necessarily should have a will. You should. The will would kind of mirror the provisions of the trust, but the most important part of the will is that it has a pour-over provision. That provision allows for any assets that were not placed in the trust to then be captured by the trust. It becomes like a catch-all basket, if you will, and it allows all of the assets to pour into the trust after death. And so that in that instance, that's the perfect example of them being companion documents. Now, people can have a will without having a trust. Sometimes people have a will just because they want to direct certain assets, or they want certain assets to be directed in a certain way at death, but they know that they have a lot of non-probate assets, so then they just have a will. So I'm not saying you have to have both, but I am saying if you have a trust, it's great that you would have, it's recommended that you would have a will.
And there always seems, you know, when doing the research, you think about all the different things that you have. You know, you may have your car, you may have your house, you may have the 401k, some stocks, but there always seems to be one or two little odds and ends that were hanging out there that you didn't know. So that pour over provision is important so people would understand. And that's something that it's probably not going to be found on documents that you would find online. That would be something that you would have to have somebody who is drafting, who's going to sit down and do a extensive sit down with you to be able to ensure that pour over provision is in your will and also in your trust documents.
Yes, and I think it's important to understand that this process takes time. It's very important to have someone interview you and really discuss what your intentions are, because you can see some boilerplate language, but that may not be exactly your intent. And so having the conversation is very important.
So when you have your assets, you put your assets into the trust. A lot of people may be afraid. Do they lose their assets at the point in time? Can they come back if they want to revoke the trust? Can they do that, or is it once I've did it, it's done?
Well, if it's a revocable trust, you can make any changes that you want to during your lifetime. And usually when people create trusts during their lifetime, they're revocable. So I think the idea of I don't own it anymore is a little... it's a misnomer, because you do. Like, and for tax purposes, it's still yours. So, and then when you have revocable trust, you're usually the first trustee. So you still have power over all of those assets. So the title itself may say something different, but what that actually means in practice is something else.
So another reason, again, why it's so important not to try to do a trust offline and to have someone that is going to sit down with you to help you to ensure that you set up the right type of trust that you really want, that your intentions are properly captured on paper.
Exactly.
So who manages the trust that you have set up? As we're going into that, do you name a person that you want to manage the trust? Does a court name a person? How does that particularly work?
Yes, so generally when someone creates a revocable trust, they name themselves as the trustee, or if they have a trust with their spouse, they both are trustees, and then you name a successor trustee in the document. And that trustee could be an individual, and that trustee could be a corporate trustee. A corporate trustee would just be an entity that is a third party. Usually not a family member, and it's an institution that would help to execute the intentions of the trust.
So say you name one of your children, and the children's unfortunately in an accident, or you name somebody that you thought had good judgment, but now you want to change. Can you change that? As long as you're living, can you change that trustee if you want to, that's going to administer your trust after you've passed away?
Yes, you can continue to change the trustee as often as you wish. It may cause fees in terms of amending the trust seeking an additional trustee. But you can make as many changes as you want to. And I think that it's important to have not only one person identified, but several people identified, especially in the situation of spouses, because usually those people are together, siblings. They may, if they're young in their career, they may not be able to serve. And so you really want to just use careful thought when identifying who could be a trustee. It was the same conversation we had when we were thinking about an executor and a will.
And it kind of, not to bring up the situation, but it kind of, maybe the families that were in the duck boat accident, the spouse may have made the other spouse a trustee, but you didn't know that you were going to lose nine people out of one family in that situation. So now you've got a situation. So in some cases, you really need to think and maybe set up another trustee, have a backup trustee to the backup trustee.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So we've kind of covered that question. So now you can have more. You can do more than one trustee on a thing, and it's also for your best advantage that you may want to have more than one trustee. What are the duties of a trustee?
So the trustee needs to manage the assets. They have they have certain rights that arise from the instrument. They can sell the assets. They can purchase assets. They can invest assets. And you want to give them enough responsibilities and privileges so that the assets can grow and be managed in the way that you determined or intended. So there's a right to pay taxes or duty to pay taxes. There's a duty to pay expenses. They act as you would have acted if you were still living.
So you mean that I've put my assets in a trust and the tax man still comes? He doesn't stop at this situation?
No. Unfortunately not. If that were the case, we'd all have everything in a trust and we would put IRS out of business.
Are there any types of trust that may not be subject to state and federal income taxes?
Well, it depends on the threshold of the income that's earned. If you're under a certain amount, you would not be exposed to federal income tax and state income tax. So it just depends, and we always recommend that you have someone that's familiar with income taxation of trust to prepare those returns if you would be subject to tax. That would be Form 1041, and they're not intuitive forms, so you really want a tax preparer or accountant, CPA, who is familiar with those forms.
So what if we have identified somebody that we want to serve as a trust official for our accounts, but they decide that they don't want to be a trust administrator? What happens in that situation?
Oh, so they don't want to be a trustee?
No, they don't want to be a trustee.
Okay. And sometimes that happens. You know, life changes, and perhaps at the time that the trust was drafted, the person thought that that would be a good idea, and I would always, you know, let someone know that I've named you as the trustee in my documents. So you want to at least do that due diligence as you're drafting. But sometimes they decline to serve, and so courts can appoint someone.
Okay. So then we go back, touch on briefly, individual versus a corporate trustee. I know an individual, I named somebody, but a corporation, then that's a corporate trustee. What do people really know how those differ and what, and how to determine which one is best for them?
Well, sometimes people select corporate trustees. Some of the trust companies have investing arms. They have portfolio management. They can provide a level of service that may be a little bit more and more sophisticated than an individual could. And so maybe that is a reason why people would pursue the corporate trustee route. It's not to say that an individual could not invest, but sometimes people get busy with life, and sometimes people just decide that this is a little bit more than they want to bite off. There are people who have careers in administering trust, and so they would be suitable candidates to serve as a trustee. And so it's something to think about.
If you have any questions for our trust administrator, give us a call on our studio line, 816-931-5534. That's 816-931-KKFI. So when should we look at updating our trust, or how often should we update our trust?
So I think every time you have a major life event, it's a good time to revisit your estate plan generally. If you get married, if you get divorced, if you have children, you want to look at all of your controlling documents, your trust, your will, your beneficiary designations on all of your assets, and just make sure that they're updated. And then I also think it's important as you age to revisit your documents and see if they still address what you need. You may not need to take care of your kids if your kids are in their 50s now. You know, that might be time to consult an attorney and have the trust amended. So I would say life events, life changes, and then as we age, you know, just revisit it periodically.
So if we have a child and we may be unsure, they may have some life changes, some things they're struggling with, I know Farrah Fawcett made those same type of benefits in her trust for her son because of it, he was hooked on opioids. How can parents make sure that they do that to ensure that their children don't squander through the money and use it for purposes that they didn't think they that the parent didn't want?
Well, generally, trusts are written so that trustees have certain powers when it comes to distribution. So when I say powers, they have a certain, they have discretionary powers to distribute income or distribute principal from the trust. And so the discretionary latitude that they're given allows them to kind of determine what would be the appropriate amount. I know that with certain discretionaries that people would have to present what their intent is, what it is they want to buy, what they need the money for, and then they make the decision and they approve it or they don't approve it. And so I think that discretionary power allows for the trustee to really use their knowledge about the beneficiary to make wise distributions.
We have a caller. Rich, can you tell us what part of town you're calling from and what your question is for Donna?
Sure, Overland Park. I've heard stories of the beneficiary feeling that they were being taken advantage of by the trustees or that the trustees were totally indifferent to their problems. I don't know what the beneficiary's rights are under those conditions, but I'd like to hear your description of that.
Okay, so as I'm hearing this question, you're asking me, can beneficiaries protest or maybe challenge the decisions of the trustee?
Absolutely. That's the question. And also, in that case, does the beneficiary have to spend fortunes for legal advice in that case?
Well, I don't know if I would say they have to spend fortunes, but there would be some type of action if they're trying to remove the trustee, if there are some claims against the trustee. And so that's why it's just very important that we make wise decisions about who we name as the trustee. Unfortunately, that does happen, and unfortunately, it does usually take some legal recourse to remove or to challenge trustees' actions.
What happens if the beneficiary just simply wants to argue that the trustee is not doing their proper duty or even taking stealing?
Yes, so that would also be an action that they would need to bring to the court. Yes. That's the only way to properly remove someone who's acting as a trustee.
How hard is that to do?
It's not hard. I say it's not hard to get them removed. There's a process to get them removed. But I think it's something that you should consult an attorney about and get some information and get some guidance on that.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rich. So what a lot of people don't understand is that the trust administrator has a fiduciary duty. Can you briefly discuss what that fiduciary duty is?
Well, they have a duty to obey the outlines or the direction of the trust. They can't use the trust assets for their own purposes. They're not supposed to steal. The trustee is supposed to manage the assets for the benefit of the beneficiary. Where the conflict comes into play is that the beneficiaries may have different ideas of what was intended by the trust. They may have ideas about what they're entitled to. A trustee may be acting in accordance with the written provisions of the trust, but just being able to be aware of the outlying provisions of the trust is the beneficiary's obligation. They are entitled, if you're a beneficiary, qualified beneficiary, you're entitled to a copy of the trust, and so you'll be able to see what the trustee is supposed to do.
And the trustee can't sell the property to themselves for lower than market value. They can't do shady things like that. The court would then mandate that the trustee reimburse the trust, or the court can, in some cases, reverse those decisions, correct?
Yes, they would have to provide restitution to the trust if they were found to engage in an action that was illegal and in conflict with the intent or the in conflict with the
wishes
of the settlor, and if it's not in the best interest of the beneficiaries.
And that's why it's really important, again, to really be careful in who you select for the administrator of your trust, because that's something that can impact how the people who benefited from the trust will be financially compensated or have the finances be the funds to be able to do the things that they want to do.
Absolutely.
We're going to take a short break. You're listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City's community radio station. We're talking trust today with Donna C. Watson, and this is the last in our series in wills and beneficiary deeds, life insurance, funerals, and trust. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this short break. And we're back. This is 90.1 FM, KKFI, Cowtown Conversations. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. And we're finishing up our segment today on wills and beneficiary deeds, life insurance, funerals, and trust. And this is our last segment. We're talking trust. And our guest is Donna C. Watson. She's a trust administrator for Country Club Trust. So we just had a caller, and he called in and he talked about different trusts and different things you can do. But earlier we talked about two different types of trusts, a revocable trust and an irrevocable trust. What is the difference in between the two?
Okay, so a revocable trust is created during the settlor's lifetime. They still have power to make changes during their life. Really, the assets are still for federal, for like tax purposes, still their assets. It's a technique, it's a device, it's a way of creating a trust during your lifetime. Usually, the settlor is the trustee of the trust, and then they name a successor trustee. And a revocable trust is one that cannot be changed. Usually, revocable trusts become irrevocable at the decedent's death. And the irrevocable trust, there's no flexibility in making changes to those trusts.
So you were talking about income beneficiary and a remainder beneficiary. Can you talk about those on that? Our listeners know what those are.
Okay, so as we talked about a trust, we said that a trust is created for the benefit of a beneficiary. There are different types of beneficiaries. So the income beneficiary receives income from the trust, usually during their lifetime. So the income must be distributed during their life, and so there is a reporting and accounting where the income that's earned during the year is determined, and then that amount is distributed to the income beneficiary. Remainder beneficiaries only have an interest, if you will, once the income beneficiary has passed away. So they aren't entitled to anything until the income beneficiary has passed. And sometimes, depending on how that is drafted and depending on how that is communicated, that causes a lot of confusion and frustration for people. They may be thinking, I'm entitled to this money now, but they're not presently entitled to the money. It's only after the income beneficiary is gone. And so you need to be very clear about what everyone holds in terms of their present right to income streams.
So when we use the word beneficiary in regards to a trust, what does that mean? What is it when you say you're a beneficiary of that trust?
Okay, you are the person that trust benefits. And not to sound to oversimplify the word, but it was created to benefit you. You and whoever else was identified in the trust agreement. And so a beneficiary can be a person. A beneficiary can be a charity. A beneficiary is just outlined in the trust. And so you want to make sure that you understand what type of beneficiary you are. We were just talking about income beneficiaries versus remainder beneficiaries. You want to make sure someone who has an income beneficiary has a higher priority than a remainder beneficiary. So you just kind of want to understand where you are in terms of the priority and hierarchy of the beneficiary claims.
So anyone can be a beneficiary of trust. You don't have to be a family member. You can be the next door neighbor, somebody that they liked. It could be their pet if they wanted to do. Some people have done that where they've made their, you know, they want to leave their house to their pet, but you can't leave an animal a house. But you can maybe leave money for your neighbor to take care of your dog and kind of do things like that.
Absolutely. So it does not have to be a family member. So people leave money to charities. People leave money to strangers all the time. It has to be someone that's named and identifiable.
So you could leave that money to your church, or you can do a couple different things with that. If you wanted, you can make the church a beneficiary of that and kind of go from there.
Yes.
So are there any things that people really need to know about what they need to do when they're really establishing a trust, what things they need to do?
As we said, I think it's important to have a conversation with an attorney, be able to communicate what your intent is, be able to communicate if you want your beneficiaries to get outright distributions, or if you want it to be distributed over time. Be aware of your financial holdings. Make sure that you've done a good inventory of what you own. And as you continue to acquire assets, you want to make sure that you continue to title those assets in the name of that trust. You want to revisit it. We talked about that. You want to revisit this plan. If it's a revocable trust, you can continue to amend that trust during your lifetime. And you just want to make sure that everything is updated if you have major life changes and as you age.
So the best thing to do is to make sure that you've, I know T.D. Jakes calls it the State of the Jakes. He does it every year with his family. They update and look at all the different things in which they have going on. And they want to ensure that they've got everything where they need it. So that's a good plan for us.
So it's funny that you say that. I was talking to my family, and so we decided that we were going to take Columbus Day as the holiday that we're off. We're all off from work, and we're just going to make sure that we are looking through all of our documents and making sure that everything is updated, that there's no loose ends, and if there are any, then we're using October as the month to execute those changes.
We've got a caller, Henry. Can you tell us what part of town you're calling from and what your question is for Donna? Hello?
Hello, Henry. Yes. Actually, my name is Sherry.
Okay, Sherry.
And I'm calling from Colorado. I'm listening online. I was wondering if she can explain what is a dynasty trust.
Okay. So I don't have as much experience with dynasty trusts, but I do know dynasty trusts tend to exist for longer periods of time than the trust that we're kind of outlining here.
Okay, thank you. So it has something to do with the duration?
I'm sorry. It deals with the duration and the way that they're able to kind of circumvent the termination, usually 21 years after the date of death of the settler. So generally, a trust isn't supposed to exist indefinitely. But the dynasty trusts are created in such a way so there's some longevity to it. However, I don't have a lot of experience with that.
But that may be something they could call and contact somebody within that local area.
Yes, yes.
That would be able to help them in the Colorado area.
Yes. I always recommend when people are looking for someone with certain expertise in law to call their state bar association and ask for referrals.
All right. Thank you so much.
Uh-huh.
Thank you so much. If you have a question, give us a call on our studio line, 816-931-5534. That's 816-931-KKFI. So if she brings up a valid point. So if you're in Chicago or if you're in Colorado or if you're in Florida, do you have to have a different sort of trust? Is a trust, does it have to be according to state law, or does it fluctuate?
No, it's governed by state law, and where your assets, the majority of your assets reside, where you reside, where your assets are, that would be the state that would dictate where the trust would be administered. That would be the state. Those are examples of where the state of the state where the state that would have authority over your trust. So it's very important to make sure that your estate planning documents are written in accordance with the state in which you live.
We've got a caller, Mr. Stover, Henry Stover. Can you tell us your question?
Go ahead. I'm from Overland Park, and Attorney Watson, is Country Club Trust also the same as Country Club Bank, or are you affiliated, or are you entirely separate entities?
Okay, we're separate companies, but of course we are companies within the same umbrella. Similar ownership, but the trust company was created to address the trust needs of our accounts. We are run separately. We're in the same building, but we are on a different floor, and so it's a separate entity, but under the same umbrella.
Okay, and Attorney Watson, I think it would be so much simpler if you used the language instead of settler. You would say the creator or the grantor. And, of course, the trustee, that's good language. And I think you should clarify that it could be the maker, the creator of the trust. Could be the same person as the first trustee, and also would be the same person as the first beneficiary, so that during that person's lifetime, that person, under the fiction of this trust, could do all three things. And of course, then if a person is incompetent, how is that decided? Is that decided by several doctors, by family members signing things? I also want to address is that I think there was a question about oral gift giving, and in the state of Missouri, you are limited to just $500 when you say orally something. So any of these gift givings or intent to transfer, it has to be in writing. And one question I had was, do you suggest witnesses on a trust, or is it just the person signing as the maker, the grantor, or the settlor, and the same person as the trustee signing from a notary, or do you suggest witnesses?
Thank you so much, Mr. Stover. We'll listen offline. We've got a couple other callers.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Thank you. So, Donna, should a person have a witness in a trust?
It should be notarized. That's the best formality in terms of executing the trust. Usually we have the wills that are witnessed. But the execution will be in compliance with the state requirements as outlined by the attorney.
We have a caller online too. Carrie, can you tell us your question or your comment?
Yes, my question is, I did not get the attorney's name and contact information.
We're going to give that. We'll give you the number for the organization where she works for. Can you provide the name for Country Club Trust and the number where people may be able to contact you if they have questions?
Country Club Trust is located at 1 War Parkway. The telephone number is 816-751-4288.
So we had a lot of different things. So definitely people should look at having a couple of different people witness their trust. Maybe they're one of the children or somebody they may be mentioning, so they know exactly where the trust is. Because if somebody has a trust, but nobody knows about the trust, and what happens in that situation?
And so it was kind of the same conversation we had a few weeks ago with, it was the same conversation we had with the will. You want to make sure that your family is aware of the trust. The attorney will have a copy of the trust, and when you die, that can be presented so that it can be administered.
Okay, so sounds like there's a lot of different things that people need to make sure that they have the I's dotted and the T's crossed when you're doing a trust, and also making sure that letting somebody know that there is a trust.
Yes.
So, other than the attorney, is there anybody else that you would maybe want to have them have a copy of that document?
Anyone that you are identifying as a trustee in the document should have a copy of the document. So while the obligation may not arise immediately, especially with corporate trustees, you want to forward a copy of the trust to them so that they understand that in the future that obligation may arise.
Can you set up a trust in such a way in which you may skip your children, but then it goes on to help and fund your grandchildren or somebody else down the road?
Yeah, so those are generation skipping trust, and that's a technique that allows for really to care for the grandchildren. The idea is that the children of the, and that person said, say, maker or creator of the trust, are in a position that they can take care of themselves, and so they're not looking for those distributions or those assets. So a generation skipping trust would be a technique and a viable trust option for those situations. And to get further clarification and how those are created and executed, I again say, talk to an attorney.
So it's definitely one of those things. This is not something that you can use boilerplate language off of TV or from the internet, something that you found that you definitely, in the situation, you get what you pay for. So if you don't pay a lot for it, then you may not want, it may not have all the things that you think that were in it. So it's important that you contact a company. But also, are there places where people can go and get more education about trust and different things? What would you suggest?
I would suggest if you're looking for some basic knowledge about trust or any of the kind of estate planning vehicles that we talked about on the series, Legal Aid is a great resource for you to get additional information, especially state-specific information and authenticated information. You want to talk to someone who's credible. Also, I mentioned reaching out to the state bar association in which you live, requesting recommendations from people who practice in this particular area. It's a very complex area, and it's important to have someone that has the expertise to assist with draft, not only drafting, but can give you advice about what would be the best route to pursue based on your intentions.
So you can look at the Missouri Bar, and I know Jackson, they have a Jackson County Legal Bar Association does free legal classes, so that may be another route where you can go. And I know they do different topics every year. Maybe next year we can, I've worked with them a little bit, maybe we can have them talk to talk about trust. I think that would be a good thing, trust and wills, to add to their series for next year, because so many people pass away without a will. And as you, the world's richest man at one time, Howard Hughes, passed away without a will. Prince, $300 million worth of assets, passed away without a will. Aretha Franklin, $80 million worth of assets, passed away without a will, without a trust. And in those situations when you transition and you seem to, you are destined to say intestate because you died without a will or some other documentation saying how your wishes were going to be, how you wanted your wishes carried out. And it was so sad in Aretha's case that she was in a hospice and she still could have made those decisions. we always think that there's going to be time.
Yes, and I think that that's the biggest thing. We think there's going to be time, and maybe we just don't want to face our mortality, but I think it's important to make a plan. It's not just to make sure that your family is taken care of, and no one is looking at it as a windfall, but it's just important to help them. The grieving process when someone you love dies is can be lengthy. It can be all consuming, and that is not the time that person should be dealing with how do I handle this sale of this home, or should I sell the home, or what should I do. I mean, it's best to plan when you're at your best, when there are optimal in an optimal position. Going through the grief process, I just know how difficult it is, and so it's really my recommendation to start having the conversations now. Don't wait until the end of your life to start making some plans. It's important to plan. If you really love the people that you say you love, you'll help them get through this process as easy as possible.
I would like to thank Donna for being our guest today and helping us discuss a topic that can be very difficult and can be a lot of stress. The goal of this series is, as I look around and I see so many GoFundMes for funerals, I've seen people pass away with parents pass away that could have did a beneficiary deed, and they could have transferred the house to the next generation without having to go through probate because the state didn't have so many different things. These are documents that can be legal aid will help you with the beneficiary deed. They had a program where they were doing them for free, and when I was the neighborhood president, we had a couple different people get those, and they were able to when they transitioned, the child went down, turned in a copy of the death certificate, the house transferred to the next generation without any considerations, any money. So think, we say we love our loved ones, but we need to make sure during a time when somebody transitions, it's a stressful time. And if your wishes are not written down, if you haven't established a trust, then what you may have wanted to happen with your assets won't happen because it will depend on somebody else to make that decision. So think about it and care for your loved ones. Pre-planning is one of the easiest things that you can do, but can also help to make sure that your wishes are known and that when you transition, your plans are what you wanted, not someone else's wanted. And if you put it on paper, it's easy. But also, revise and update it and look at it from time to time. But also, don't just put it on paper and think about it and walk away. You know, every couple of years when life changes, go through that. You may not have the assets, you may start now to have a trust, but everybody can have a will, and you can get a will done relatively cheaply, and you can do a beneficiary deed if you own a home. So these are things we shouldn't even talk about. So we never end Cowtown Conversations without a community minute. The Plaza Art Fair is this weekend. It'll be held on the Country Club Plaza Friday, September 21st through Sunday, September 23rd. There'll be over 240 artists, 3 live music stages, and 22 restaurant booths. The hours on Friday are 5 to 10 p.m., Saturday 10 a.m. to 10 p.m., and Sunday from 11 to 5 p.m. The last meeting to provide input on Eastside Revitalization Ordinance number 170962 will be on Monday, September 24th from noon to 1:30 p.m. at the Hillcrest Community Center, 10401 Hillcrest Road. KCPNR is offering a 4-month program to help people pay off their high summer cooling bills. To participate, call customer service at 1-816-471-5275. The next election will be November 6th. The last day to register in Missouri is October the 10th, and the last day to register in Kansas is October 16th. Your voice is your vote. Let your voice be heard on November 6th. Join us next Thursday as we will talk about buying and selling your home and preparing your home for sale. For Cowtown Conversations, I'm your host, and it's been my pleasure, Joseph Jackson. Stay tuned for Larry J, and have a great and wonderful day.
Mm-hmm.